The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Healing the Grieving Heart with your host, the mother-daughter team of Dr. Gloria Horsley and Dr. Heidi Horsley. Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi have devoted their lives to helping individuals move forward after a profound loss and each week share stories of hope and understanding. They dedicate their show to their son and brother Scott and to others who have lost loved ones. Now join Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi and share the journey from grief and loss to hope and renewal.
Welcome to our show. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, with my co-host,
Dr. Heidi Horsley.
You're listening to Healing the Grieving Heart. We hope that this show will be a show of hope for you and renewal. We want you to think about leaning on our hope if you don't have hope of your own until you find it. Well, Heidi, what's going on with Facebook? I know you put some things on it today.
Well, I put our show on today, and you can go on and look at the e-card, and I also put a really neat YouTube clip about a project called the Capstone Project out of Northern California, where it's an organization that takes bereaved parents to different parts of the world to do volunteer work, and so that they will heal after, to help them heal after loss.
Yeah, so you'll be able to get a hold of those folks in the Capstone Project if you are a bereaved parent and are interested in going to other areas of the world, helping out other bereaved family members, right, Heidi?
Well, that's what I love. What they try to do is they will bring bereaved parents to, like, orphanages, and they'll partner them up with children that have lost parents. So you've lost a child, and you're working with a child that doesn't have a parent, and it's an amazing experience. It's emotional. And like I said, I think this YouTube clip, which is very short, it's 3 to 5 minutes, really captures the incredible work they do. And like my mom said, if you want to get involved, please contact them and let them know you'd like to go on one of these trips.
Yeah, so join our Facebook also, and it's very easy. If you're not a Facebook person yourself, it's easy to sign up and then come over and be a friend of Open to Hope Foundation is how you find us. And also go to our Open to Hope site and sign up for our newsletter, because if you get the newsletter, you're going to find out what radio shows we'll be doing for the next month. So it's a great thing to have. Plus, there's some great articles and things that are, you can hear about things that are going on. And also, remember, if you're a writer and you want to write for us, go to the Open to Hope site and look at Write for Us, because we'd love to have you do that. And remember, all these shows are archived on thegriefblog.com, and they're archived 24/7. So you will be able to go and listen to shows. And, I know a lot of people wake up at, 2 o'clock in the morning, Heidi?
And listen to the shows?
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, because oftentimes I think grief becomes the loudest and the most difficult when everybody else has gone to bed and you're by yourself and you're not busy and it's really dark and you're just sitting there saying, okay, I'm in a lot of pain right now. And it's so nice to have the internet where you can log on and have a virtual community 24/7 and reach out to our shows, reach out to our blogs and our websites, et cetera, and connect with other people that are out there in the middle of the night.
Absolutely. Well, Heidi, we've got some great guests today. We're going to be talking about messages of hope after loss, and we're going to have Catherine Jean Williams on. She's written a wonderful book on What Can I Say When Words Escape Me, Being Present in the Times of Sorrow. Really a lovely book. It's not too long, and it has wonderful quotes and sayings and thoughts and pictures, and we'll talk to her about that in a few minutes. And also, we have Pat Murphy coming on. Pat Murphy is, as I am, an advanced practitioner nurse. I think she's probably in the critical care area, and I was in the psychiatric area when I was working as a nurse. And she's published extensively on bereavement and ethics in palliative care, so I think this should really be a good show, and we love to bring you these messages of hope after loss. So, Heidi, do you want to introduce Catherine? And she's very special to us because she also writes for Open to Hope.
Sure, I'd love to, Mom. And as you said, our guest today is Catherine Jean Williams, and we're going to be speaking with Catherine about messages of hope after loss. Katherine Williams is an artist and writer whose work centers on messages of hope and inspiration. Her book, What Can I Say When Words Escape Me, Being Present in Times of Sorrow, was inspired by tragedy in her own life, including divorce, the loss of her father, and job loss. Welcome to the show, Katherine.
Thank you both. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to both of you.
It was great to have you on, and also thank you for being one of our writers. We really appreciate that. I enjoyed reading the article about your dad and mom recently.
Thank you.
So tell us a little bit. I mean, you know, you've been through some things that I know a lot of our audience out there are dealing with right now. You know, not only, you know, divorce is a big thing, and you said that you were divorced about 10 years ago, right?
Yes, that's correct.
And then your dad died. How many years ago did he die?
He died in May of 2008.
Yeah, so a couple of years ago, and then you lost your job around the same time, right?
Yeah, just a few months after his death, I lost my job.
And what were you working in? What area?
I was working in automotive in Detroit, Michigan.
Wow, so you've got a lot of people there in the same boat still, right?
Absolutely. It's a pretty common loss in our industry here.
Yeah, and I think it's one of the things that this shows is that we do have multiple losses, and you know, divorce and then the death of a family member and a job. Life goes on, doesn't it, Katherine? I mean, we just kind of slug through these things.
I was going to say, Mom, life can be unforgiving. I'm going to pipe in for a minute, but you know, here, Katherine, you're dealing with the death of your father and grieving that, and then you've got the death of your job basically to deal with also, and it's hard when life gets in the way of our grief, I think, which it does.
Absolutely. The loss of my job, basically, I feel like it almost gifted me a time to grieve, and it was in my face. I had no choice as the kids went to school and the house became calm and quiet to go into that dark place and kind of be isolated with all of the emotions and the anger and the hurt and the sorrow. And that's kind of how I found my outlet of writing and artwork, which was very therapeutic for me.
And we'll get into that with your book. I was just thinking with some of our folks out there where they've had, say, a divorce, I would imagine that having a divorce, and obviously yours must have been a fairly traumatic one, as you see it as one of your turning points. And I guess you might say they all are. Having a divorce is not a great thing. But I would think that your father probably came in as maybe a male figure for your kids and whatever, too. Did he have a special place for you after that?
Absolutely. He stepped in wholeheartedly. My boys were very, very close to their grandpa. In the time that I went through the divorce, I went back to get my bachelor's degree, and my parents were very sound and loving and supportive during that time. I knew I needed to be more marketable. I was thinking in the sense of, you know, sole provider, single parent. And so I pushed myself, giving up a lot of sleep and just working hard with online schooling at night and keeping the boys busy in the evenings, you know, and trying to focus on making sure we were safe and as comfortable as we could be in the scenario. I tried to be as healthy as possible for the kids, but the few hours of downtime in the wee morning hours, it really hit me hard. And with each loss, it certainly has shaped me and matured me in a new way and made me much more compassionate, like, as I am today. There is really a commonality between all of the different types of bereavement. And, you know, there's an uncontrollable factor that it's really tough to fight because you want to control everything, and the reality is there's things you have to give up control on, and the best thing you can do is just, you know, go into yourself and fight to survive the situation.
We had Andrew Bitosh on the show. Oh, actually, his show, we pre-recorded it. It's going to be a great one to listen to if you are, you said something that triggered this for me, because one of the things that Andrew said, he's a bit of a philosopher, is that the one thing that we do learn that separates us actually from the angels is what he said is our suffering teaches us compassion.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
And you mentioned that you've become a much more compassionate person through all this. Well, Now, what did you find some commonalities between a loss of a death and the death of a marriage?
Absolutely. Like I said, you know, you try to control things. You think that, you know, the entity itself has a life of its own that's going to go on forever. And, you know, whether it's a loved one or your marriage or your career, you know, that is not eternal. Your attachment to it may feel eternal, but reality can really hurt, and it feels like it kicks you when it's down. But when you are down, it's when you realize that, you know, you're not your career, you're not your marriage. You know, you're mm-hmm. simply a person that's coming into the world and doing the best you can under sometimes some pretty harsh circumstances.
Mm-hmm. So you decided to, what inspired you to write your book?
You know, in the aftermath of my job loss and my father, I was in a pretty low place. I felt very dark. I hurt a lot, but I was trying really hard to put on that happy face. I was trying to, you know, keep my chin up for my kids and support my mom and reach out to the people that were touched by the loss of my father. So I started writing a perspective from my dad. You know, I wrote this inspirational writing called Heartprint, and it was his message to my mom saying, you know, that our partnership is lifelong. It's like a swan, and it reaches beyond death. And trying to look at, you know, how can I help soothe people by using a thread of spirituality, you know, a blend of nature, and then overlapping these words on some really nice photos that kind of touch your heart, you know.
It's a lovely book. Well, Heidi, you were making a comment about, as she's talking, I'm thinking about her saying how she can help other people, and you were talking a little bit about siblings and children. Can you talk a little bit about
that? Yeah, there was some stuff that really resonated for me in the article on Open to Hope that you wrote,
uh-huh.
And you said something in your article. You said, I knew my father for 38 years, and his death felt like my world was over. How can I help my mom when she was married almost 50 years? So it reminds me of what happens during sibling loss. In other words, you kind of made a shift where you were saying, okay, I know I've had a significant loss, but look at my mother. She's
right.
Really had a significant loss because she was with him that much longer. And it's exactly what I did when my brother died. I was so into my sibling loss and missing him, but then I looked at my parents and
right.
thought, yes, I'm missing him because he's my sibling, but it's so hard to lose a child that I wanted to help my parents through their grief. And a lot of what I was dealing with was helping my parents and worrying about my parents
right.
and taking care of my parents and kind of being there for them. And it feels similar to what I was reading with you, with your concern for your mom.
Right, it just puts it in a whole new perspective. I mean, I felt like he was my world, but I still had a life of my own separate from my parents. They were very supportive, and I interfaced and talked to my dad every single day, you know, as I drove home from work or when I got home, or he would call. And, you know, but my mom, you know, they were retired, and they were with each other day in and day out. You know, we gave them a 40th wedding anniversary party, a surprise party, because my dad always said he wouldn't make it to his 50th, and he passed 2 months shy of his 50th wedding anniversary. But it was very touching and really left me, you know, at a blank. I just thought, how can I help her? You know, my pain is just so insignificant compared to hers, you know. And she's a very strong person, and she's come so far, and she's doing so well. It just, it gives me new hope, you know, to see her come through it.
Yeah, it's interesting how we do tend to rank our pain, though, isn't it? Mine
mm-hmm.
is this, and yours
and
is that.
And our losses,
yeah.
of which one is most significant.
And we like to say that, what, Heidi, the loss that knocks you down on the floor.
Right, and it's a friend of ours, Elizabeth DeVita Rayburn, said the worst loss that is happening to you is the one that's knocked you on the floor, the one where you can't get back up and you don't know how you're going to survive. It is interesting, though, to be dealing with your own grief and worrying about your parents and how to help them as well, because, I mean, I definitely was wearing two hats when my brother died, and it sounds like that was you as well, as, you know, you're really concerned. And you're dealing with your own grief, but you're also really concerned about your parents.
Right. And my kids lost three grandparents mm-hmm. in less than 6 months. They lost my father, they lost their dad's father, and then his mother. So just mm-hmm. within 6 months that they were spinning in circles.
They mm-hmm. went through a lot. So we have to go to break now, but when we get back from break, I want to talk to you about, you talk about igniting your passion again, and I want to talk about how you did that and how you've survived these things that you've gone through. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, with my co-host, Dr. Heidi Horsley. You're listening to Healing the Grieving Heart on Voice America. You can reach us through the blog, thegriefblog.com, as well as the Open to Hope site. And remember that all these shows can be downloaded on iTunes. Please stay tuned for more.
A healthy dialogue for your lifestyle. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Have you lost a loved one and are wondering where to turn? Feeling overwhelmed by your grief? Join the thousands of people who have found hope and comfort as a part of the Open to Hope online community. It's free, it's safe, it will lighten your burden. Just type in opentohope.com and join our circle of support. Open to Hope is a charitable foundation. All donations are tax deductible.
The Compassionate Friends Self-Help Bereavement Support Organization has nearly 600 chapters in the United States, offering friendship, understanding, and hope to families that have experienced the death of a child, no matter the age or cause. If your family has suffered this tragic loss, there is no reason for you to walk this difficult journey alone. Many who have had a child die have learned how helpful it is to be able to talk or just listen in a group setting with those who truly understand the pain of losing a child. To locate a chapter near you or to receive a free comprehensive bereavement packet, including a copy of the Compassionate Friends National Magazine, We Need Not Walk Alone, call toll-free 877-969-0010. You are also invited to visit the TCF National website at CompassionateFriends.org.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
And now we rejoin Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi on Healing the Grieving Heart.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. For those of you just joining us today, I'm Dr. Heidi, and I'm here with my mom, Dr. Gloria, and we are talking about messages of hope after loss with our guest, Catherine Jean Williams, author of What Can I Say When Words Escape Me? Welcome back, Catherine and Gloria.
Thank you.
Thanks, Heidi. Well, Catherine, I wanted to make sure people could get to your website because it's a beautiful website and they can get your book there, What Can I Say When Words Escape Me, Being Present in the Time of Sorrow, which has got beautiful illustrations and wonderful quotes and just wonderful material in there. And I like it because it's not too long. And sometimes when you're feeling sad and lost, I mean, it's a really visual, wonderful visual presentation. So how do people get to your site?
It's www.lifetimeartimpression.com. It's LifetimeImpression.com. It's a mouthful, but hopefully once they get there, then they can look around. Like you said, it offers some art. It offers some photography, and the book's on there. You can get to my blog and also to my column.
So talk a little bit about writing this book. You know, did it bring? Do you think you brought things up from your divorce, as well as your job loss, as well as your father loss, all these things?
Absolutely. It touched on what shaped me into the person I am today, which. In the aftermath is a lot of suffering and pain, but it also resonated, you know, the thought that I am definitely a survivor. I feel like I'm a very successful person. I live through my heart. That is definitely maybe a plus and a minus. I don't know, but I'm definitely a feeling person. So it brought a lot of it forward. It closed the loop and gave me closure on a lot. It really opened my heart again through the process and was very therapeutic for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think it's so comforting to know that, hey, life is full of, you know, adversity, and it may be hard in the future. I have no idea, but I am a survivor, and I'm going to get through it. I'm going to eventually find hope, even even if I've been in pain, I will eventually find hope again.
Absolutely.
So one thing I meant to ask you and I didn't was, what did your father die of?
You know what, he was one of those senior citizens who was really afraid to go to the doctor. So all his life he had been not a very healthy person, although he was, you know, the day before he had a heart attack, he was mowing his grass and he drove himself to the doctors. He was fighting congestive heart failure, which he had been in multiple times. He was just diagnosed with tonsil cancer, and he had been home and wouldn't go to the doctor for quite a while, to the point where he only could barely drink his food. He was blending it before he finally went in. So he was diagnosed with cancer of the tonsils, and on his first day of chemo, which was a Good Friday, he actually had a heart attack, a massive heart attack that night. Mm-hmm. And
wow, so he went through a lot, but hung in there with it. Sounds like he was probably a strong example for you. Well, I wanted to ask you, you were talking at one point about that you lived through addiction. Was that your addiction or your husband's? Or?
It was my ex-husband's. Yeah, that was one of the things I learned I couldn't control. You know, when we were young adults, we used to social drink, and that was okay, you know, but as we grew and our marriage grew and I grew up, he continued to be in the rut of social drinking, and we had two kids, and suddenly, you know, a life took on its own, and his belief was as long as he was contributing financially, it was okay, but, you know, really it was me kind of running the show and raising our kids, and it took me to realize that, I can't fight his demon, and it's his responsibility, and it was about me taking on ownership of having a healthy environment for me and my kids, and that's where it came full circle.
So it sounds like moving on from that, from the divorce, part of what you got you through there and gave you the hope to move on was going back to school and deciding, you know, stepping out that way?
Absolutely. I mean, looking in my kids' eyes was just such motivation for me. I just wanted them to have a healthy life, you know. And so that gave me the motivation to, improve myself and be more marketable in my career and enable me to support us.
Mm-hmm. And so that's what kind of kick-started you through there. Now, what where were your low points then when your dad died and you lost your job? And was there any time there where you thought that you weren't going to make it?
You know what, my lowest point, I think, was in the process of my dad dying. I can so sympathize with someone sitting on the side of a hospice bed now in such a new way. I had no idea. It's just the most horrific thing, and you have no sense of time, you know, as you watch the person you've looked up to and loved your whole life deteriorate, you know, physically. And, you know, that in itself was such a trying time while you're trying to balance your life and keep things together and, you know, keep your chin up. So that I do touch on in the book a little bit, too, with the writing. But the hospice side of things really taught me to look beyond the physical body and realize that there's, you know, a strong spiritual side of this that takes over. And I just, my heart goes out, like I said, to anyone who's going through that right now or who has went through that. It's tough praying for a miracle for someone to survive and then suddenly praying for their death just to give them some relief, you know, real mm-hmm. hard process.
And what would you suggest to somebody who's had that kind of loss, and what now? How did you decide what to do?
You know,
You lost your job, and then you, like, okay, now what?
You know, in all my life, I have enjoyed art and drawing and, you know, painting and writing, and I lost sight of that through my life as I let it go in a different direction for maybe the wrong reasons. I was chasing a career that gave a comfortable lifestyle, not so much a fulfillment inside to me. So for me, something I just started writing and trying to help reach out to others, it opened up my heart and helped me heal. So to someone who's going through this, you know, if there's anything that they can do for themselves, it may just be picking up a patch and quilting or, you know, writing or drawing, sketching, anything that they've found in their life that's given them a little bit of of feeling of joy, you know, to just pursue trying to look at that. You may not feel like you're whole with the process at first, but it really gives back to you. And I don't know the psychological side to that. I'm sure you guys do, but it was so therapeutic.
Yeah, I think I like this idea, Heidi, about finding, and we've talked about it before, but even making a list of things that you enjoyed in the past, if you can jot something down. I mean, is there any, I mean, it may be so simple to start with as I used to like to have a bubble bath or something.
Absolutely.
Right. You know, and just, or maybe, I know guys like to do stuff, maybe they can, you know, shooting some baskets or cutting some wood or, I don't know, you know, whatever things that you...
Oh, I love that, because when you're feeling really bad, if you physically force yourself to move, it does help.
Absolutely. And for me, you know, what I found is I tried to fight the time for me to be alone. I kept myself very busy at first before I lost my job. I just kept myself so overwhelmed, and it was almost like my denial of just being with myself to let the feelings flow. And so... suddenly when I lost the job, and I had an empty house, I had to face the reality, and that's what the creativity outlet did for me. You know, it allowed me to let the walls down, and it's scary to do that. It's really scary.
Well, and you're making a good point that, you know, there's a lot of ways to express ourselves, and it doesn't always have to be talking. We can express our feelings and our grief through many, many outlets, and I think that's nice for people to hear, because in our society, there's a lot of pressure for people that have had a loss. You need to talk about it. You need to keep talking and talking and talking. For some people, that's very therapeutic and helpful. For others, it's about they need to find other outlets for expression.
Did you do any group things?
You know what? I volunteer for an organization locally in Ann Arbor called Safe House, and it focuses on helping survivors through sexual assault and abuse. And it the volunteer side of things really helps me also get through things. You know, you go out and you reach out to someone, and you always get something back from that. You don't, I didn't expect that, but it really did touch me. I was working their crisis line, so I was, you know, people would call in with very serious concerns, and then you kind of walk them through and help them discover their own ways, you know, that might be beneficial to them in their situation. So absolutely getting involved in the community, if you can force yourself to do that, really does help.
Now, I like that. This is after you lost your job.
Yes. Well, I had been working with Safe House for a number of years, but I tell you what, through the time that I had lost my father, it took that loyalty to my commitment to them for me to keep going there in the aftermath of losing my dad, which I did. You know, most of me wanted to say, I can't deal with this, and I would like to say, no, I'm not going to help you out. But I pushed myself through it, and it really paid off for me to do that.
Well, tell us about your life now. As a message of hope after loss, what would you say to folks out there?
No, I would say that, you know, following your heart and feeling again just really enables you to feel life. You know, I'm not numb at all. I'm feeling more than I've felt ever. And, you know, that is really attributed to me launching my web business, which is in the Healing Arts Forum. I'm writing now for Examiner.com. It's a healthy living column for the Detroit market on the Internet. And it keeps me thinking about inspiration. I offer 3 articles a week, and it's really just pick-me-up articles. They're very short, and I just posted one yesterday that is, you know, finding your inner child. Take some time to play, you know. I mean, not many adults will go out and do a snow angel, you know, but
I love that.
Silly and goofy as that. I mean, it really does pick you up and take you to a new level.
Oh, that's wonderful. Do you have any quotes or something you particularly like that you'd like to end the show with?
You know, I just really want to communicate that I believe all of us, it doesn't matter what we've been through, can survive. We do have a survivor in us. It may be fearful to reach to that person and pull it out of you, but it's dormant at times, but it's there. So, you know, might be hard to see that hope and very fearful, but you can get through it, and time does help.
Thank you so much for being on the show, and again, thanks so much for writing for us, Catherine.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Catherine.
We appreciate everything you're doing. Please stay tuned for our next guest, so we're going to continue speaking on the topic of messages of hope after loss. Pat Murphy will be on our show. She's an advanced practice nurse, and she's published extensively on bereavement and palliative care. Stay tuned for more.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
This podcast is brought to you by the Open to Hope Foundation, which also offers you a free monthly e-newsletter containing current articles, book and movie reviews, as well as podcast schedules. Just go to opentohope.com, click on newsletter, and receive your monthly newsletter filled with hope and support. Open to Hope is a charitable foundation. All donations are tax deductible.
Hello, this is Dr. Heidi Horsley, host of Healing the Grieving Heart. Have you lost meaning and purpose in your life since your loved one died? Does each day feel like an effort? You do not have to go through this difficult time alone. As a bereaved sibling and licensed psychologist with over 15 years' experience, I will work with you in a collaborative, supportive way. If you live in the New York tri-state area, you can contact me at 917-338-6396 or email me at drheidihorsley@gmail.com. That's drheidihorsley@gmail.com. To learn more about my private practice, visit my website at www.drheidihorsley.com. Thank you.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
And now we rejoin Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi on Healing the Grieving Heart.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. For those of you just joining us, we're talking today about messages of hope after loss, and our second guest is here with us, and her name is Dr. Pat Murphy. Dr. Pat Murphy is an advanced practice nurse working with dying and grieving people in the inner city, and she teaches at New Jersey Medical School. She is a board certified in advanced psychiatric nursing by ANCC and in thanatology by ADAC. She has published extensively on bereavement, ethics, and palliative care. Welcome to the show, Pat.
Hi, good to be here.
Hi, Pat. We've got the same degree.
Oh.
I used to teach at the University of Rochester.
Oh, good school.
Yeah, so... Yeah, well, I was very interested. I know that you're a member of ADAC, the Association of Death Educators, and Heidi and I are members of that, and we actually went to their conference last year and did a bunch of YouTubes that you we have on our site, right, Heidi?
Yeah, we've got about, I don't know, 50 or 60 up there right now.
Yeah, Pat, you'll have to tune into those.
I will.
Some of the folks you know are talking about their expertise, grief, and loss. And one of our, Heidi and I, one of our goals is to bring this expert information to the general public, because we feel like sometimes all, you know, all the wonderful things that go on at ADAC and the ADAC conferences really don't get out to the guy on the street. So I was interested. I think you just did something for ADAC, didn't you? Did you do
I did. I did at least a page in their forum on death, when death is sudden and traumatic, because that really is the focus of most of my work.
Yeah.
I worked in the trauma service and still do for quite a while.
Yeah, and that's certainly dear to our heart, because in 1983, my son was killed in an automobile accident when I was actually 17 years old, Heidi's brother, and I was teaching at the University of Rochester at the time. So it's a very interesting area to me, and I was looking at some of the research that you were involved. I don't know if you're still involved in the research project, or you finished it, where you were looking at the intensive care unit and things that could happen.
Yeah, I had two nationally funded projects. One in the surgical trauma center to introduce palliative care into that environment, and the other into our medical intensive care unit. And we learned quite a bit, but I think before I even talk about that, I just need to say that the most of what I know about this work that I've been doing for almost 35 years, I've learned from the people in Newark, New Jersey, the grandmothers in this city have taught me everything. I've spent many a night, all night with them, on their journey, learning how to be with someone in the most intense pain of their life. So that would be you the day you came and found out that your son was killed in a car crash.
Pat, when you're working with the grandmothers, their losses are their children and grandchildren?
Well, the grandmothers are the glue that hold this city together. The middle generation either has been taken by the virus or the violence or lots of other things that happen in an inner city. And so the grandmothers are very often raising their children's children. And they are an amazing group of women who've taught me so much about how to be with people in pain. Certainly the moms and the dads are also important, but I've just, you know, have a real connection with the grandmothers in this city. I've been in Newark for more than 37 years working in this population.
Wow. So you really have seen the suffering. You know, if you're in the hospital intensive care, you know, and you're with the families when they scream and fall on the floor and do all, you know, all the things that we do. But a lot of times people don't really realize the ramifications, you know, after they do leave, because they're working in intensive care and there isn't a lot of aftercare money.
Right. But I do follow up with families after, let's say, a death in our trauma center.
Yeah.
I will follow those families for a couple of months, and if they need anything longer term, I will refer them. Mm-hmm. But I really do see as that time of notification or that time of spending the last few minutes with the person you love as incredibly important, because that stays with people for the rest of their life. What stays with them is how they were told the news and probably who told them. They may not know the name of the person, but they'll remember the kind of a person. What they remember is how they were told, and if it was a positive, if that could be a positive experience, at least a compassionate experience, it stays with them forever. And if it was a negative one, it never leaves them either. So that's the message I get out to the medical students and the residents, the doctors in training, that moment of being with that family is so important that you do it right.
Right.
That you don't make it worse.
Yeah.
The other message that's loud and clear to me that I give them is that they cannot make it better.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm. And they can't, but don't be profound. There's nothing profound.
Nothing
you can
profound.
Say.
Well, there's nothing to say. And the interesting piece is so many of these young professionals who are going to be doctors or nurses go into the profession because they want to help. And at a time like this, everybody feels so powerless that they avoid the situation. What you have to help them understand is that they can't fix it.
Mm-hmm. Right. They can almost do is witness.
That's all you do. You're on the journey and being a witness is profound.
Mm-hmm.
Being able to stay with someone during that awful, awful time is essential and very important to their.
Yeah, I've got to tell you, Pat, I remember when my brother died, someone came and gave me the news, and I didn't know this person. And I threw my arms around him, screaming and crying, and he got so stiff and backed away from me, and I could tell he couldn't deal with my emotions.
Yep.
I still remember that very, very clearly. Okay, this is not a person that I can do this with.
You'll never forget that. I had an interesting experience a couple of years ago. We had an elderly woman who was hit by a car, and she was brought in to our trauma center, and it was clear that she wasn't going to survive. And her brother was out in the waiting room, so I went out to be with him, and I'm sitting there, and he starts to tell me that, you know, there used to be five of us, five sibs, and all my brothers and sisters are dead except for this one sister who's left. And then he said to me, out of nowhere, he says, you know, my brother Jimmy, he died in the war. Said, and I remember we were in the kitchen, and this army guy came up the stairs, and for me, it just made so real the fact that you never forget where you were and who told you, and
yeah,
that was 60 something years ago that
well,
he was talking about.
Yeah, I mean, well, Scott was killed in 83, and I remember the police called us in the middle of the night. And they came over to the house, and those two guys were so compassionate. I'll never know who they were.
Wow.
I sat down with them, and this guy held my hand.
Ah.
That's amazing.
See? You don't forget.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like they can make it better, but what you experienced with your brother was he's pulling away.
Right, and stiffening up and
right.
not
instead
wanting.
Instead of coming into being with you. And it's kind of like you absorb some of the pain.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very intense work. I spend a lot of time taking families in to see the person when they're still alive, even
mm-hmm.
if the whole team is working on them.
Mm-hmm.
Because being with and touching and whispering in someone's ear when you believe they're still alive is very important,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to going in after they've been pronounced.
Mm-hmm.
So I do a lot of that, and I never leave them alone when I take them in there, because the team needs to not have to take care of them at that time if they're working on the patient, right?
Right, exactly.
Lots of rituals can occur around that time, too, that will facilitate the grieving process later. We get a lot of kids, you know, traumatic accidents with kids, and so often a lock of hair, washing the body,
mm-hmm.
at that time for a mom is incredibly important. And if you can offer her the opportunity to bathe her child one more time, there's something very spiritual about that.
Wow, I bet there is. Now, what about after they die?
That's usually when, you know, often with a child anyway, particularly either right before they die or after they die,
yeah.
we will encourage the family to be with them and bathe them. If I've never had a mom say, no, I don't want to bathe
her. I was going to say, that is so emotional just to have that visual.
Mm-hmm.
Of a mom,
but you know what else it does? It gives the mom, what I do, I stay with them and help them, you know, turn the body and do all that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll start by saying, oh, look at those feet. He's a big guy. How much did he weigh when he was born? And
yeah.
we are off on a life review.
I was just thinking that. That's exactly what you're doing. That's fabulous.
Oh, I love
that. He weighed
that.
6 pounds, 8 ounces. He started to walk when he was this. And she goes and tells me all about her precious child.
Mm-hmm.
And for her, that's healing on some level.
Absolutely. And the humanity there. Well, I want to, I've got an email here from Lucretia, and it says, May 31st, 2009, I lost my twin sister. We were 32 years old. I went on a bike ride to the river, and while crossing in the crosswalk, her sister was struck by a vehicle that didn't even slow down. He didn't even stop. He hit and ran. I need support. That's why I am at this website. Hopefully someone will help me.
Mm.
Do you have any thoughts for Lucretia?
I guess it's very important for me to have the patient, the family member, identify what they mean by support.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what does she need? Right now she's in probably the worst time. May to now, she's coming up to the anniversary in a few more months.
Right.
There's no way to make this better. She just needs to know that she will come through this.
Yep.
And she will not be who she was before this happened.
Absolutely. And also, there's a twin sister organization. Do you remember what it is, Heidi?
Twinless Twins.
Yeah.
Oh,
Twinless
good.
Twins. So please, Lucretia, go to Twinless Twins, and I think you'll have some people who understand that twin
mm-hmm.
situation. I think it's
because that is a unique situation. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, it's really great to have the internet, isn't it? Do you use the internet much with people, or recommend it?
I recommend it. I don't use it that much.
Yeah.
I mean, the students are all over it, of course, but
mm-hmm.
yeah, some of these twinless twins, this kind of organizations are really unique and special. There's
mm-hmm.
some.
Yeah, and you know, I was interviewed for Time Magazine a few weeks ago, and they talked all about how people are using Facebook as a way to reach out to the grieving to others that are grieving,
mm-hmm.
and to get support when they're grieving. So
that's
yeah,
great.
I love the internet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it can be a great service. Well, you know, what about our families that are angry out there? They're listening to you right now, and they're saying, "Well, that's all well and good, but I didn't have anybody like her around, and
mm-hmm.
And I did get bad notification." I mean, what do you suggest to these people?
Yeah, I mean, you can't go back and fix that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not fixable. All you can do is try and understand it, but you just try, or you just stay mad. You know, you have that choice.
And that's a legitimate emotion, right, Pat?
Well,
really
yeah,
is.
And basically, if you think about it, the two big emotions that keep us from feeling the devastating emotion are anger and guilt.
Right.
And so if we are pissed off at something or someone, or if we are incredibly guilty because we think something we did, you know, the if-onlys, I call them, that anytime you hear the word if-only, the words if-only, you're hearing guilt.
Mm-hmm.
Those two emotions protect us and defend us on some level from the powerlessness we feel.
I want to talk about that more. We have to go to break now, but when we come back from break, I want to talk about that because guilt and anger sometimes have gotten a bad name. They may be the thing that gets
right.
gets our foot out of bed in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
So please stay tuned for more, and we'll be talking more. You're listening to Healing the Grieving Heart. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, with my co-host, Dr. Heidi Horsley, and we're talking with Pat Murphy. Stay tuned for more.
A fresh look at today's health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Whether you are a new or frequent listener to Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi's podcasts, the Horsleys value your connection. We invite you to join our Facebook and Twitter circles of support. We'll keep you up to date about Open to Hope Foundation events, new podcasts, and YouTube spots. Just go to Facebook or Twitter and search for Open to Hope. Open to Hope is a charitable foundation. All donations are tax deductible.
Hello, I'm Eric Kippel, former quarterback of the Detroit Lions and outreach coordinator of the University of Michigan Depression Center. It gives me great pleasure to announce the publication of my autobiography, Real Men Do Cry, a quarterback's inspiring story of tackling depression and surviving suicide loss, written with Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi Horsley and published by Quality of Life. Real Men Do Cry takes you on my journey of fame and fortune to unbearable pain and depression following the death of my 15-year-old son, Jeff, and gives practical information on the warning signs and risks of depression. My story ends with an uplifting message of hope and recovery. I have faith that if I have made it, you can too. You can visit my website to learn more about my book at erichippel.com and more about depression on depressioncenter.org. Thank you.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
And now we rejoin Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi for our final segment of Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope and renewal for those who have suffered the loss of a loved one.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. For those of you just joining us today, we are talking to Dr. Pat Murphy about messages of hope after loss. Welcome back to the show, Pat and Gloria.
Well, thanks, Heidi. When we went to break, we were talking about guilt and anger, and everybody's like, oh, we got to get rid of those, and here Pat is telling us we don't have to, which I love, because we've had, like, Candace Leitner on talking about she started mad because she was so freaking angry.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
Well, and also, Mom, talking that they serve a function, as Pat was saying, because they defend us against feeling powerless, and that's frightening to feel like you have no power and you're powerless.
It's overwhelming to feel that. You get almost paralyzed by the powerlessness. And so in some ways it's adaptive to have somebody to blame or somebody to be mad at. And sometimes people choose God to be mad at, and that's not a bad thing, you know. God can take it. God's got big shoulders.
God can take it, but one of the problems is, and I see it more with males, is they want to go down the litigation road sometimes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And that's not a great road a lot of the time.
And I have worked with two different groups over the years. One, Compassionate Friends, who I have the most amazing respect for, and Parents of Murdered Children, who are also an awesome group of people. But what I've seen is that too often, sometimes the Parents of Murdered Children's group gets stuck in the anger. They get stuck looking for justice and trying to find justice. And there's no such thing when your kid gets murdered.
I just had someone call me the other day. Heidi had talked to her, too, and her sister was murdered. And I said to her, she was talking about, you know, her sibling loss and things. And I said, well, you know, one of the things that you might see, and I know you're probably, you know, what's going on in family dynamics is your dad may start down the litigation road. And she said he absolutely is already.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and what we've heard on the show from people that have gone down that road is that once they get to the trial and everything happens, they don't feel as relieved as they thought they were going to.
Right. What they've done is just prolonged the inevitable.
Right, because the person they love is still dead.
The overwhelming feeling of loss.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that Candace Leitner said, that she said that it actually delayed her grief. She said 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Because she got so involved with Ned. But what a wonderful thing she did for the
girl.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Totally. Yeah, so, your anger can definitely serve a positive function.
And okay. And it's as long as it's conscious and it's not destructive.
Well, one of the things that I think is tough with the medical community is sometimes they go down a road which is not going to be productive. And then I also see, particularly with overdoses and things like that, I've seen it quite a bit, where maybe one parent wants to go through the whole court thing and the other one doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it is so painful for the one that doesn't want to go that direction. And it's oftentimes women, because I think men want to do. You know, they want to take action. They
well,
want to, you know.
Very often men have a very hard time doing sad. They do mad much better.
Yeah, exactly. And that's hard. You know, it's a hard thing. Well, I want to talk a little bit about your work in the inner city, because we had Ronald Barrett on, and he was talking about how important it is to have respect for the community and
mm-hmm.
the rituals and that kind of thing. And I was wondering what you had found out.
What I've discovered, and clearly I know this at my bone marrow, is I don't know what other people's rituals are. I can't impose them on people, so the best thing to do is ask.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, tell us, what's it like in your family when someone dies? What's the usual thing you do? You know, there's this old adage that they say you should treat people the way you want to be treated, and that's not necessarily true. I think we should treat people the way, after we ask them how they want to be treated, and then treat them that way.
Yeah, because there is an old community of rituals. Well, do you think that it's kind of hard for people. I know you come in and are able to meet them where they are, but I imagine when you work with your medical students, when you hear somebody that's a doctor or a doctor training, you might kind of be afraid or intimidated to tell them what your rituals are.
Maybe, but I've seen much more on the other side of that, which is some of our medical professionals who have their own rituals and perceive that that's the right way.
Ah, mm-hmm. So they're trying to be helpful again.
Right, like there's no other way but their way, because anything else is wrong, and you have to beat that out of them on some level.
Now, if I'm a bereaved person, one of the things that we talk about is the fact that you have to teach people how to treat you. I mean, that's just the
yes.
way it is, because they don't know.
Exactly, and you have to be assertive about that.
Yeah.
You can't expect them to know what to say or how to say it to help you. You have to figure it out yourself and then tell them. Again, it's about not running away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
so Pat, in working with these inner-city grandmothers, I was wondering, what kinds of things have you seen that they've done to kind of work through their own grief process and find hope again?
What I've seen is an amazing ability to overcome the most overwhelming feelings and emotions. We have, unfortunately, some violence in this city, and when... I have a mom. I had a mom not too long ago who was in with her third child dying.
Wow.
Five sons, and this was the third of them. One to the virus, one to the violence, and then this one was a motorcycle crash. And I remember sitting with her and saying, you know, we've been here before. Tell me, how did you get through your other mm-hmm. two sons' deaths? And she said to me, I went to Jesus. And so my response was, go back. Because
right.
what she's telling me is that worked for her.
Mm-hmm.
And so if she identifies something other than drugs and alcohol that work, I'm going to encourage her to really... the other night I was sitting in the family waiting room all night long with a mom, and we looked around the room, and the waiting room was filled with women. And one of them looks up and says to me, the men do the violence and the women do the pain.
Mm.
Wow.
And I said, oh, boy, I have to write that down.
Wow.
Because it's so true. But yet, they take care of each other.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I've found, that they have hearts that are open enough to take care of someone else. When they've been through something awful, they are the first group of women to come out and be there for the next group. So spirituality and their church is very important in most of the people I work with live.
Mm-hmm.
And so sending them back to the church is a helpful thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ronald was talking about that and said, he's an African-American, and said in
mm-hmm.
that community, almost everyone has some kind of an afterlife belief.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that it's also important, and I'm sure you know, for the family to be able to come in together. But I want to do a little advocacy piece here, because if you are out there, you've had a terrible experience, is there something they can do to maybe do a little advocacy, not litigation, but write a little note to the hospital or something and saying, you know, I think this could have been done a little better?
Absolutely. That would be so helpful. That would be so helpful, to put it into writing about what your experience was, because then we would have it and we could take it to the group that needs it and say, here's what you did and here's what you could do better. So if we had that information, if they wrote to the hospital and said, here's what happened to me and here's what happened because of what you did, and then we could take it back to the residents or the medical students or the nurses and say, how can we make this better? We recently had that experience. We had a wife who was left in the waiting room while her husband was dying in the intensive care unit. And people forgot about her, essentially, because they were so busy trying to save him, that an hour after he was dead, they came out and found her there. And so she wrote to us and told us that whole experience. And so what we did was to try and learn from that. We put that letter on the unit and had every nurse, every resident, every cleaning lady read it. Because in the letter she also said, here's what you could have done to help.
Okay, and my suggestion to you, advocacy out there, is don't write it to the doctor or the person who did it.
No, write it to the hospital.
Write it to the hospital.
Absolutely.
And this is important because if you're angry about something the next time, maybe they might do it differently. I mean, people have compassion. They don't mean to. It's just, you know, you're trying to keep the person alive and in intensive care units, and things happen that people don't even realize.
And people don't go to you or act in a way that's not helpful to you, not because they're mean and rotten. It's because they don't know what else to do.
That's right.
And so we're working hard on our end to try and train them. I have an elective for all fourth-year med students in end-of-life care, and they spend 2 weeks with me. And they come with me while I do this work. And right afterwards, I'll say, here's why I did this, and here's why I did that. What do you think? But maybe the third time I say, come with me. Maybe if you want to say some things, we can do that. So it's kind of seeing it as a skill training session.
I love that.
I think I have a lot of hope for the next generation of physicians coming up.
Well, that's great. And you know what, folks out there, if you don't have this kind of thing going on in your hospital and you had an experience, maybe when you write the letter you can say, you know, you really ought to get more education in this area, or, you know, that kind of thing, and try to encourage people to do this. Well, thank you so much for being on the show today. It's really been interesting having you on, and I'll look forward to seeing you at ADEC.
Yes, I'll see you then.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
It's time to close our show, and I want to thank our guests today. Please tune again next week when we're going to be talking about loss of a spouse with Rosalie Siciliano and Kate Breathrup. They're both people who have lost spouses. This show's archived on thegriefblog.com as well as the Compassionate Friends website. And we want you to remember that others have been there before you and made it. You can, too. You need not walk alone. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, with my co-host,
Dr. Heidi Horsley. Catherine and Pat, thank you for helping people find hope after loss.
You have been listening to Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi Horsley on Healing the Grieving Heart, heard live every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on health.voiceamerica.com and worldtalkradio.com. Healing the Grieving Heart is archived on thegriefblog.com as well as the CompassionateFriends.org websites. Tune in again next week, and thanks for listening.